What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line this early morning, the Iceman himself, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Barely awake, but I'm here.
Good man. Way to stay committed.
Always.
The banger in the paint. This guy surviving fire alarms in the middle of the night. Rajan Walia, how you doing?
You know what? I completely regret setting this 9 a.m. pod, but for NBA, you got to get up.
Yo, on the real though, how mad are you about your fire alarm in the morning? Like, a 3 a.m. fire alarm has to be one of the worst things to have to deal with.
The worst part about this is one of the first times I went to bed when I said I was going to go to bed. I set my alarm at 6:30, and a fucking fire alarm happens at 2:50 a.m. for a good 40 minutes. It's not one of those like 10-minute or 5-minute ones that you can just avoid.
Okay, so did you have to rush outside without any clothes on, or do you actually have time to like get a sweater on and slowly praise your way out of there?
Man, I had to go down 30 flights of stairs, so you know what? I'm going to definitely put on some... Yeah, I'm floor 38. Yeah. Oof. So, had to put on some clothes and check the Facebook group to see if this was a fake fire alarm or not, and then slowly trudge my way out.
Okay, I have a very important question. Did the wife have to put that video of you guys going down the stairs on Instagram?
It's
part of your workout program?
Well, she should.
She's gonna save it.
That's like TikTok treasure right there.
And were you able to keep up with her?
Truth be told, we took the elevator because no way I'm gonna shower after going up those like 30 flights of stairs with a winter coat and some slippers.
You took the elevator during a fire alarm.
On the way up. Oh, on the way up.
Okay. Afterwards. Yo, how high do you have to be in a building to just be like, I'm not gonna make it. Like, if there's a fire, I'm done. Who cares? How high do you have to be just really fuck it?
Fuck it, I'm going to die.
One of our buddies. Josh, you remember Chris, right?
Yep.
He used to live in this building. It was like the poppin' building downtown, right by the ACC. It was one of those buildings that always had Airbnbs set up. And so this guy, whenever there were fire alarms, he was on like the 64th floor. Like, why would you even bother at 64, you know? You're just like, screw it, I'm dead.
Yeah. See, the thing is, you can make your way down and survive, but just the thinking about going up, especially because those buildings aren't meant to actually bring like hundreds, if not thousands, of people up. And imagine COVID. There's only three people allowed in the elevator at a time. I think floor 50. That's the point where it's like, you know what? No return.
25.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going down that many flights of stairs, you might as well die relaxed than die, you know, really tired.
Yeah, you're building the sprinklers. Come on, man. They're not just going to leave you alone. Oh, man, that's gold, Raj. I'm glad you could make it this morning. Good man. Anyways, guys, let's hit this off. I want to start this pod off with a couple of weird social media things this weekend. Do you guys want to start with Paul Pierce or Michael Rapaport and KD's fake beef first? Because I want to hit both of these. They're both so absurd that we got to address them. I think Pierce is probably better, right? Paul Pierce on, I think it was Saturday night, goes on Instagram Live with a whopping 368 viewers. This man was the finals MVP and got 368 viewers on Instagram Live when everyone's at home. And my guy's just there gambling in an illicit ring. Strippers in the background, getting his hair cut, just doing his damn thing. And then the next morning, not even the next morning, the next like night, this guy wakes up and just says, good morning on Twitter. 2 days later, ESPN gives him the axe, and he says he's still smiling his way to the bank. Josh, this has got to be one of your boys, man. Like, former KG teammate, you know, he was there when KG made the run. No?
I do not claim him. He has been hot trash off the court ever since he's retired. Some of his takes have been absolute garbage. So I will not claim Paul Pierce. He's basically ESPN's version of Skip Bayless at this point. Ooh. Well, not anymore, obviously, but whatever he goes to next. I mean, I saw a rumor yesterday. Not even a rumor. It was a report that said one of those like weird porno websites, they offered him a deal where he can do sports media and sports talk, I guess radio or podcasting, with a bunch of strippers in the background. They're just going to stream it, and they're going to give him like $1 million for it.
So that seems more up his alley.
Yeah, that doesn't seem bad, actually.
I mean, if you're going to dive in head first, you might as well just go all the way with it and sign that deal, right? I mean, he's unemployed right now, so why not?
Yeah, the thing with Paul Pierce is apparently, not even apparently, we have all seen it on the NBA Countdown and even on his segments on The Jump. He's such a like a bland personality. He doesn't bring much to the table. And even recently, I think it was on The Jump that he actually said the wrong team won a previous game and he had to be quickly corrected. Like, I think for him, he was just like, you know what? Like, this is probably my way out. Like, I'm just going to die on my own sword here. And you know what? He found a new opportunity, which is probably suited more up his alley, just kind of shit talking and doing his thing with a bunch of single ladies, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the non-single man with a bunch of single ladies. That sounds just like a normal NBA player, let's be real.
I think that ESPN just didn't want to have to go through the painful process of bringing him on the show and then awkwardly talking about that. Yep. I think Rachel Nichols probably went to like ESPN management after that happened. She's like, this ain't happening, so either put him on Get Up or get him out of here.
Make him wake up at like 4 a.m. to do Get Up.
Yeah.
That's wild, man. And come on, ESPN, Disney product, you got to know better if you're an employee. I'm pretty sure it's embedded into every one of them to keep their shit safe, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't think Kendrick Perkins is doing this in his off time, but not actually taping it, you're dead wrong, obviously. I mean,
I have nothing bad to say about Kendrick Perkins, man. I don't want that smoke.
You would take listening to Kendrick Perkins over Paul Pierce, though, on Sports Takes?
Yes? Over Paul Pierce? Paul Pierce said he had a better career than Dwayne Wade.
That is true.
Come on.
I mean, Kendrick Perkins also said he had a better career than a lot of these guys that are playing right now, so he's not much better.
But he did have a better career.
Did he, though?
Integral part of that 08 team, man.
It was the glue. You need the glue, man.
Exactly.
The chemistry.
That's some fat glue.
In all honesty, I think with Paul Pierce versus the Kendrick Perkins debate, I think Perkins just covers more sports. And I think he's at least in tune with what's happening. I think Paul Pierce is literally aloof. Like, he just shows up on set. He's like, oh, I got to talk about this. This is my way of making some money and staying relevant. And you know what? He found a better way of making money and honestly probably staying more relevant than he is now. Because he was the laughingstock of the sports commenting world, or at least basketball commenting world.
They don't love you like they love Kobe.
Chasing that farewell tour. They don't love you like that. By 17, by 46, is at 144.98. Victory here in...
Yeah, Pierce is sort of like the inside the NBA guys, to where they don't really follow the game outside of like the top few teams. Except he's not funny at all when he gets on TV, and he really brings nothing to the entertainment of the viewer. Yeah.
Sorry, Paul, you're out of here. Do we want to hit this Rappaport KD beef real quick? Apparently there are DMs going back and forth between Michael Rappaport, who just sings himself in such high praise as being like one of the OGs of the hip-hop industry, and you know, being around Tupac and Biggie back in the day, blah, blah, blah. This guy's been around the block. And he just goes off with KD calling each... There are a lot of expletives in this. I don't need to like hash out everything. But basically, KD called him a big bitch, you know, and to summarize everything. Now, Rappaport goes out and says that he can't go to the coffee shop without being called a cupcake. Crying wolf so hard. And Josh, you know, we talked about this just before the podcast. They have to have a movie or a TV show or something coming up. There's no way KD is getting fined $50,000 for sending DMs to an actor.
Yeah, I mean, the only place where this is going is some sort of entertainment entity. And I think we should be talking about that and saying, you know, maybe betting on what it's going to be, whether it's going to be a rap battle, a movie, TV show, maybe a podcast where you have like KD versus Rappaport on certain subjects. Like, who would listen to that, though? I mean, people would listen to start off and then they realize how boring Rappaport is. And everyone hates KD, and they'd be like, oh yeah, I just remember, I don't like this guy. This guy's a snake. So why am I even listening to this? So this is so fake. And Rappaport obviously sent the check or wired some money to KD for the $50,000 after he got fined. Because this is the most fake thing ever.
Yeah, but in all honesty, I don't think it was like made up. I think that clearly Rappaport just tried to call him out a bit. And then... KD actually took a big hit to his image, especially because he has a brand here he's trying to sell. Not in terms of his image on, like, in terms of him versus, like, the other NBA players and having some trash talk, but I don't think a lot of people would want to see someone that their kids look up to saying those kind of words with such aggression, I would say. And he was persistent, and I honestly think that both of these people lost. I think Rappaport and KD were in the wrong here. Rappaport for sharing the DMs. Like, come on, man. How are you going to air out? Yeah, exactly. Like, how are you going to air out your private battle in public like that? And for Durant, like, I just don't think that his brand accelerated. He looked like he lost this cool over literally on, like, what he described as a no-name actor. Like, this guy's trying to stay relevant, right? And you gave him the attention that he wanted.
I see this as the Paul Pierce situation, but in a different form. This is, you know, as the saying goes, all publicity is good publicity. And they're just trying to stay in the limelight. I know, like, KD is already in the limelight, obviously, but Rappaport decided to hitch his wagon onto him. And now his name is out there for the next couple days, maybe. And then who knows what's going to come afterwards. It's going to be interesting. Because I don't think Rappaport is going to be going away. He's going to be trying to get on these talk shows for a while now.
Yeah, he got his time on ESPN's First Take, so there you go. But let's move on. Let's go into actual NBA talk.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was enough TMZ. Enough TMZ.
Hey, man, we don't do that very often. You know, sometimes we got to hit Paul Pierce news. Guys, I want to talk about the Jrue Holiday extension with the Bucks. 4 years, $160 million. They make him the final piece of their big three lineup. You know, the whole plan this summer, or not even summer, I guess they got him like last winter, if anything, was to build around the big three, right? Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Jrue Holiday. Jrue was going to be their defensive stopper, their ball handler, the guy that they can maybe make second best on the team, depending on how, you know, it goes. And then, you know, the idea was to lock him up as long as they can. So Drew's 31 this year. Granted, he did miss that 1 year taking care of his wife. So, in actuality, he's got one less year of, you know, wear and tear on his knees, on his feet, whatever. But this team looks like they're slated to go a long haul, right? Like, they're planning for more than just this 1 year. Right now, they're sitting, I think, second or a third in the East, two games back. And, you know, Raj, my real question is, are they a title contender this year? Can they actually make the moves in the playoffs to, you know, really contend with Brooklyn or Philly to get out of the East?
Yeah, like for me, the way I look at this Bucks team is Jrue Holiday is a piece that they should have re-signed. I think he obviously got his pockets filled with cash, but he's proven to be an elite point guard, and he brings that team up another level. But this Bucks team, I would say, is better than the previous Bucks teams just in terms of their makeup. But I don't think that compared to the other teams in the East, that they have an advantage like they did in the last 2 years. And that's something that worries me. And I think the major weakness they have is in their coaching. Bud had put together two really strong regular seasons and then kind of came up empty in the playoffs, and that hasn't changed. So I think the Bucks are a possible championship contender, but there's some stronger teams in the East this year, and I don't like their chances going into this playoffs.
So what do you see as an advantage from the last couple of years versus this year? Because I think they're stronger this year than they've been in the past. And I think before the season started, we said that they wouldn't have as good of a regular season record overall because they lost a lot of their depth. But, you know, their top five guys are, you know, a better fit. And obviously they have Holiday to help close out games now. So what do you see as a difference there?
Well, I think the difference is the other teams in the East just got stronger. Like, the Nets were not the Nets of this year. Philadelphia slowly figured it out. They have a different coach in Doc now, who, again, it's debatable whether he's a huge, huge upgrade over Brett Brown. But, again, they're playing better basketball. I think the Celtics obviously haven't put it together, but they just have one extra year of experience under their belt. So there's three other teams in the East, and even the Heat, who were last year's championship team. They have rookies that now have one extra year. They have Jimmy Butler in his second full season. They have a lot of teams to go through, and the last 2 years, they were the favorite. Like, the competition was really, like, the Raptors and a 76ers team that had Brett Brown and not that much experience. Now, like, all the teams in the East have something to prove, and they're stronger.
I think that with PJ Tucker especially, like, he needs to get back healthy. And if they can figure out that lineup at the end of games where they can just switch literally everything, then Milwaukee takes their, you know, their ceiling to a whole nother level. So hopefully he gets healthy soon and he's able to play 20-plus minutes a game before the playoffs start and they can figure out that that rotation, because they've been doing a lot of different things on defense this year. They haven't just been dropping Brook Lopez and Giannis in the paint anymore. They're switching a lot of different stuff, and they've failed at a lot of it, but at least they're trying it, right? So come playoff time, hopefully by then they'll be able to implement that type of, you know, that type of action on defense and not look completely oblivious to what they're doing. At least Bud is trying different stuff this year, is what I'm trying to say.
He is being more innovative, but I don't know. Who do you close out these games with? Like, obviously you talked about PJ Tucker as being that fourth guy, right? Are you putting out Brook as your final piece? Are you putting out Connaughton or DiVincenzo?
No, I think the idea is you play PJ Tucker against the biggest player on the other team, because he has such a low center of gravity. He's shown that he can defend bigger players. Like, he's actually played Embiid pretty well too, in the situations where they've been matched up against each other. So you have Giannis or PJ Tucker, whoever you want to say, as the center there, and then you have DiVincenzo as your other guy with their big three.
Yeah, and also you touched upon this with their depth. Like, I think their bench scoring, or not even bench scoring, like, their bench is probably, out of the strong teams in the East, the worst.
Yeah, but at the same time, they don't have to play DJ Augustine anymore because he's not on the team anymore. So you don't have a bunch of small guys coming off the bench where teams are going to take advantage of a Bryn Forbes, DJ Augustine backcourt. So that's a plus.
Relax. They have to play Jeff Teague instead, okay? Come on now.
Yeah, like, you're going to take those extra 5 pounds?
It's pretty amazing how that went totally under the radar. Like, I didn't even hear about that till the day afterwards.
Jeff Teague?
Yeah.
Well, why would you need to hear about it? Remember when we thought that he was going to be a good piece in Boston this past year? And sayonara, my friend. You know what? Like, why do we need to talk about Jeff Teague? We talk about, like, some of the most boring players in the league. Jeff Teague is definitely top five.
I mean, their bench is okay. Like, I mean, with the guys that are coming off the bench, they know their roles and they know what they have to do. Like, Portis has been really good for them, which is sort of surprised me. I didn't think that he'd be a good fit there because I'm not sure if his game really fits into a winning concept, but he's shown that he can do it. Like, he's been shooting over 40% from three. Forbes' shooting has gone on the uptick recently as well. Connaughton's always just a solid player for them. He can play 20 minutes a game. He just can't be, like, one of the guys in your closing lineup. And DiVincenzo has played well enough this year, shooting 39% from three, I think, this year. And he's really solid defensively, too. So if he can keep up his shooting, he's a solid fifth guy.
Wow, I've never actually looked at their bench like this. They really are not deep. Like, after that sixth man, it really falls off, eh?
Like, yeah, they have Forbes, Connaughton, DiVincenzo.
Well, DiVincenzo's the starter.
Okay, yeah. Then you're going to have PJ Tucker coming off the bench?
PJ Tucker's coming off the bench, Portis. So the front court's all right. The back court is hit or miss, obviously. Forbes, you know, if he's not making shots, you can't really play him because he's too small. He's like 6'1". And Connaughton can hold his own, like I said, for 20 minutes a game. He's solid. He's going to provide you with decent shooting and pretty good defense. And he's pretty athletic, too. But, yeah, like, in terms of pop, you know, there's not a lot of pop coming off their bench besides Portis, where he can give you, like, 20 points a game every once in a while. But, you know, all the guys know their roles, at least. They know what they have to do when they come on the court. They're not trying to be all wild like, you know, DJ Augustine was sometimes.
Yo, can you chill with the DJ Augustine slander? Like, come on, man.
He was hot garbage.
Too early for that, man.
Nah, man, he's a good player.
I think the big upgrade, obviously, is Jrue Holiday, and he obviously got paid, and he changes the dynamic of how they can run their offense, and also defensively. I know Bledsoe was a great defender as well, but I think Jrue just gives you, like, a bit more versatility on the offensive end, and I think this Bucks team can make the finals. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying, like, they're a team like the Pacers or somehow the Hawks are now in the playoffs. It's the ceiling is definitely the NBA Finals, but I don't see them hitting that ceiling just with their coaching and their depth.
Yeah, I've been saying the 76ers since the beginning of the year, so I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, I'm switching my pick from Boston. That is not happening.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm done with them.
Oh, why? Come on. You don't think Jason Tatum led Boston Celtics will take you to the finals? I mean, they have the two players that they need, Josh. That's what you kept telling me.
That team is a disaster. And of course, tonight when they play Philadelphia, they're going to have like a 20-point blowout and prove me wrong. So, but I'm off the bandwagon now. Give me the Bucks. I don't want to see the Nets in the finals, so give me the Bucks. We need a Bucks Nuggets finals.
Why? Yeah,
to really please Adam Silver and all those people who care about the NBA viewers. Yes, Bucks Nuggets.
Small markets galore. Never going to happen.
That'll be a fun final, so if it does happen. Not for viewership, but just overall basketball.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm good on Aaron Gordon having to cover Giannis. No, thank you.
You'd be excited if the Nuggets make the playoffs, or make the finals, sorry, and I have to play anybody. It doesn't even matter who they play at that point.
Oh, of course I'd be excited, but I don't want to see Giannis in the finals, man. Hater. Not my brand.
You know, just because of that, I'm taking the Bucks from now on. The Bucks are my team in the East.
Go for it. Feel free. Raj, you want to take the Nets just to even out this three?
Yeah, well, I would take a free trip to the NBA Finals with this Nets team. Like, I don't see how they lose.
Hey, if they keep playing LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin over Nicholas Claxton, they're going to be in some trouble.
Not by much.
Meh.
Let's move on. Josh, I got to talk about the best team in Texas right now. There's no way this is ever going to end.
The Houston Rockets.
The Dallas Mavericks are just insanely on fire right now. 12-5 since the beginning of March. They basically turned it around after January. Obviously, took over the mantle of the best team in Texas. This point that Raj just has to die on. Won 5 straight at this point. But the one issue so far that I have is that Porzingis, once again, is hurt with a wrist injury. He's out indefinitely. I don't even think it matters for this Dallas team. I think their three-point shooting has improved so much during the season that they don't give a damn.
I don't see why not. I mean, J.J. Redick hasn't even played a game yet, and he's one of the better three-point shooters, you know, statistically over the course of history. But their defense has taken another step up the last, well, since all their guys came back from COVID, really. I think having Maxi Kleba in the lineup has been huge for them, and him being healthy again. Because not only is he like a 46% three-point shooter or something ridiculous like that, like he provides them with like a lot of athleticism on the front line. And he can guard a lot of different guys. Like, he guards Kawhi when they play the Clippers. And he also guards a big guy on the other team whenever they play, like, bigger teams as well. So, the one thing that I liked yesterday with them is, like, going back to the whole Budenholzer thing. Like, Carlisle adjusts based on his matchup. And yesterday, they weren't playing the same sort of defense as a lot of teams were playing against Utah. They weren't trying to over-rotate and come off the corners. Like, I'm not sure if you guys remember the games where, like, the Phoenix Suns played the Spurs back in the Nash era, where the Spurs would not help at all off the corners, and they wouldn't get into rotation. They basically play you 2-on-2 in the pick and roll. And that's sort of like what Dallas did yesterday, playing against Utah. They were not going to give up 20-plus threes and continue Utah's streak of insane three-point shooting. They made their guards beat them, and their guards had really bad games because they had to do everything, and they weren't giving up spot-up looks on the perimeter. So I think they laid out the blueprint on how to beat the Jazz yesterday, and that just shows how, you know, malleable that lineup is on defense and how well they can play together as a group. And Josh Richardson went like 5 for 5 and 3 yesterday too, so he's been stepping up recently, and Jalen Brunson's on like a whole other level. Like, if he continues this, like, maybe he puts himself in the sixth man of the year candidate, you know, potential with how he's played.
Yeah, let's not rely on Josh Richardson shooting good percentages from the three, because he's shooting a whopping 34% right now.
Yeah, but he's provided slow really down. Good defense over this stretch. Like, he's been the guy that's defended the other team's best player for the most part. And he's been really solid for them. I don't think he's the long-term fit there, but, you know, he's been really good the last, what, 2 months?
What did you say you think Kleber is shooting?
Well, I think he was around 46% or so.
He's 42.7.
I guess it's
which is still pretty damn high.
Still providing that defense, though.
They also have a tough stretch of games, so we'll figure out how good they are in the next 3 or 4 games as well. I'm not completely sold on this Mavs team being... I think they're overplaying their expectations, but... they are a playoff team, and I foresee them actually making it now, and I'll have to eat my words again. Or
just wild. Remember when the season started and Luka came in hella fat, looking like Nikola Jokic does like every other year except for this year? The team started off shooting in their low 30s on threes. Like, I think they were shooting 31% in December and January, which is absolutely atrocious. They've gone up to like 39% in the past 2 months. That's the kind of improvement that they've created. And by running this like lineup of versatile wing defenders, It makes everything so switchable for them too, right? They can basically switch off anyone who plays for them. Obviously, you still want, you know, your bigs like Kleba handling the, and Porzingis handling other teams' bigs, but switching from 1 through 4, it's pretty versatile, because I'd throw Dorian Finney-Smith on basically any four in the West other than, what, AD? It's pretty much the only
Aaron power Gordon. Forward. Come on.
I can put Dorian Finney-Smith on Aaron Gordon, man. I love Aaron Gordon, he can easily handle him. That's what I mean, though. This team is super versatile, and they can actually do some damage. Like, imagine going into the playoffs, you're feeling good about yourself, you're the number 2 seed in Phoenix, and then boom, you gotta play Luka? Man, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me is Dallas is probably the biggest upset potential out of all the teams that are in like the lower part of the bracket right now, because they have the two guys that can give you 20 plus points per game, and they have a bunch of guys that can shoot really hot from the 3-point line. That's all you really need to have an upset in the first round of the playoffs, is you need, you know, guys that have played together for a while that have the potential to put up, you know, 20 threes in a game. And then obviously you might have the best player in the series as well with Luka Doncic. And we haven't even talked about him yet. Like, he's shooting 38% from three now, whereas his first 2 years he was at 33% and 32%. So the biggest change in their offense not only has been other guys, you know, producing at a pretty high level, but his step back jumper has taken a massive leap. I think he got into shape about 2 months into the season. And since that point, against like really elite defenses, like he put up like 41, 12, and 8 against the Clippers in that one game. And in the game that he lost, I think it was like a back-to-back set, and he was averaging like 39 points in that two-game set against really good defensive players, obviously, with the Clippers. And obviously did it last year in the playoffs too. But his step-back jumper, when it's going, basically makes Dallas unguardable.
So what you're telling me is that Luka Doncic is on the same training regimen as Nikola Jokic during the offseason. Indulging.
I mean, not this offseason, obviously, since Jokic came in a totally different player, and he's had like 27 dunks this year, I think. Like, he had one dunk 2 games ago. Like, he caught the ball at the free throw line, man. And normally he'd put up that like 1 foot floater that he always does, and he went straight to the rim and dunked it, and I was like, holy crap. That's shocking.
You know, when you said he got the ball at the free throw line, I thought you said he was going to take off from there. I was like, whoa, what?
I mean, he took off like just inside the restricted area, which is pretty good for him, being able to actually make it to the rim.
He actually got teed up earlier this year for having a big dunk. Do you remember that? He did the Kmart pulling himself up on the rim thing. Teed him up instantly. Yeah. Can't say I've ever seen Nikola Jokic get teed up for a dunk before.
I think they were trying to prevent him from getting an injury. They're like, T, like, don't do that again. You're going to injure yourself. You're
too valuable to the league. Don't do it.
Exactly.
Oh, man, I like it. Right now, Dallas is sitting at the 7th seed. We ought to assume that they're going to win the play-in game, right? That's assuming that they're even in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not going to be the 6th or 5th seed.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers could easily fall back there if, you know, LeBron and AD continue to be injured, and they're relying on Dennis Schroeder and Andre Drummond to really carry the team. Andre Drummond, also a buyout guy who went to the Lakers, injured in his first like 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, his injury looked pretty tough. I mean, that's one of the more disgusting injuries you can have.
Yeah, it's not great. So this Lakers team, imagine the Lakers in a playoff situation, or in a play-in situation, guys. You're feeling yourself, you know, you're the Spurs, you're like, you're glad that you're in the 8th or 9th spot, you're feeling it, you're feeling good. And then LeBron and Anthony Davis are just waiting for you on the other side of the court for like a 2-game tournament. I'd be so pissed, man. Like, you've done this all year, just have to deal with LeBron for 2 games that matter? Man. DeMar DeRozan would be shaking in his boots.
I think the Lakers also, just looking at their schedule, have like their last 8 games are they play the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Trailblazers, the Suns, which are 4 teams that are going to make the playoffs in the West. And then the last 4 games are against a playoff Knicks team, the lowly Rockets, the Pacers, who might actually be fighting for something, and the Pelicans, who might be fighting for something. So they have 4 tough matchups in the first 4, and then they have a few teams that might be fighting for positioning in the playoffs. So it might not come easy.
Yeah, it all depends when those two guys get back, obviously, but, you know, based on how it's trending right now and the injury updates that have been provided with AD, which we don't even know when he's coming back, and LeBron, who's supposed to be out for 6 weeks or so, and they're having tough times beating anybody, really. I mean, they've won, what, like one or two games since those guys have been out together? So
they are 4-6 in their last 10.
Really?
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Seems they like squeeze out a couple of games here and there.
Yeah, they beat the Magic and the Kings.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. They beat the Trash.
Well, they got to keep doing that to stay out of the play-in game. But as of right now, it looks like, you know, obviously Dallas is trending up. They're only 2.5 games behind the Lakers right now. And my dream scenario is to have, you know, Zion versus LeBron in the first play-in game. And then have, you know, Dame and the Blazers against the Lakers to try to get some revenge for last year.
I hope so. And then they have to play Utah or Phoenix.
Hopefully Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see them play Utah in the first round. That'd be absolutely amazing. Because then Utah gets their big test. After having this amazing season, what do you get in the first round? You get AD and LeBron.
Yeah, yeah.
Prove it.
The narrative would be crazy, though, if they ended up dropping to that 9-10 seed. Then LeBron musters his way into the playoffs, then beats the number one seed, and then beats all these other teams, and then goes to the finals, and then releases the Space Jam movie. I don't know if my brain can handle that.
Yeah, that Space Jam trailer, what did you guys think of it? Real quick.
I didn't watch it.
Raj, did you like it? Oh, Josh, you suck, man.
It was too blue.
Really?
Like, I felt like I was watching everything through, like, sunglasses through a blue tint lens. Yeah, like, you'll see it. Like, every scene has, like, a huge aspect of blue, and I guess that's maybe to make it look futuristic or whatnot. But overall, like, it looks decent, and the graphics are... The CGI is something else, but you got to see the final product before I'm going to make judgments. But nothing's going to beat the OG.
Who are the main actors in this trailer?
LeBron.
I mean, like, real actors.
Don Cheadle is in it. Yeah. I was pretty iffy about the whole thing, but once I saw Don Cheadle, I was like, man, I'm down.
Okay.
I'll watch anything with Don Cheadle. Even a bad LeBron movie.
Yeah, I mean, if Don Cheadle's in it, it has to be good.
Yeah, some guys are just get that expectation, you know?
Yeah. Was Lonzo Ball in the movie?
I think LaMelo is. I think, no, LaMelo did. Not Lonzo. LaMelo's in it. I think Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, obviously, and some other, I forget who the other players are.
Dame's in it.
Oh, yeah, Dame.
And are they playing against the Monstars again?
Yeah, those are the Monstars.
Yeah.
So the Monstars are Dame, Klay Thompson.
Wait, the Monstars are players?
Yeah.
Do you not remember the first Space Jam?
Oh, they turn it. Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, they steal the players' like powers.
Are they aliens though? They're not actually players.
Yeah. But the aliens steal the player powers.
Okay. So it's still aliens stealing the powers.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I assume so, at least.
I'm looking at the list of players that are in it. So, again, Dame, Klay, Anthony Davis. I'm forgetting a few big ones, but apparently Draymond Green is in it. Kyle Kuzma is somehow in it. Chris Paul is in it. So there's quite a few NBA players, but can't remember who the other Monstars are.
My biggest question is, how does LeBron get sucked into that world, right? Because I think in the first one, in, where like Michael Jordan's on the golf course, and then he gets sucked into the hole, right? So yeah. How does LeBron get sucked into that world? Is it going to be the same thing as, you know, MJ? Probably not.
It was something about like him trying to motivate his kids or some shit. You know, some like lame LeBron narrative about him being such a wonderful person.
It sounds like a great movie.
Like I said, we're still going to watch because of Don Cheadle, man.
I mean, I watched Thunderstruck, so I'm going to watch this.
I did not watch Thunderstruck.
God, that movie was bad.
Did you watch Uncle Drew as well?
I haven't watched that movie. Ever since Thunderstruck, I'm very, tentative in my movie choices.
Uncle Drew is a guilty pleasure movie that you enjoy when you are slightly intoxicated and you don't really care about the movie. You just watch.
Sounds like a good time. Mainly the intoxicated part, not so much the Uncle Drew part. All right, let's finish this off, Josh. You have any stats corner?
Yeah, I got one thing this week. It's not going to be as exciting as last week, but we'll get into it.
Okay, we'll make it exciting.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
And put my headlock and say, "Pah!" And then we'll go upstairs into my bedroom and I'll grab my wife like this and we'll say, "Pah!" And then I'm gonna wash up, we'll wash up and I'm gonna be like this, "Pah!" Good night.
So opponents' points in the paint. So this year, we've had certain teams change their strategies in terms of how they defend the three-point line, allowing more teams to try to get to the basket and, you know, deal with their big guys instead of giving up 23s a game. So can you list, we'll start with the worst teams in terms of points in the paint. So who gives up the most points in the paint in the league right now?
I want to say the Houston Rockets.
Houston is not in the bottom five. They're about middle of the pack.
Wow. Damn. What about New Orleans?
New Orleans, I think, is a team that gives up a lot of threes, so they're about middle of the pack, too.
0-2, Raj.
So we have at least one playoff team. The other one, I think, is in the play-in game. And one team you should get easily is the worst defensive team of all time.
Sacramento.
Yes, they are by far the worst at 53 points per game. Allowed in the paint.
Well, yo, Rashawn Holmes is like 6'7", man. No wonder.
And it's not his fault either. They actually play pretty well with him on the court. It's when he leaves the court and Marvin Bagley's playing the five or whoever else they have behind him now. Like Hassan Whiteside.
Hassan Whiteside.
He who shall remain nameless.
Hassan Whiteside. That's gold, man. All right, so we're looking at... give me the Warriors. Warriors are pretty trash.
The Warriors are not, no. They're actually very high on the opposite side of the list, which we'll go over in a second.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, what about...
Draymond, best defender ever.
What about the Detroit Pistons?
Yes, Detroit is the third worst right now, and they're allowing 50.3. And there's also another Eastern Conference team that's in the basement that is in the bottom five.
Cleveland?
Cleveland is number five, or bottom five, at 49.5. And then you have one of the best defenses in the NBA, surprisingly, is also in this group. But that's just by strategy. They're running guys off the three-point line to lead players into their big stalwart in the paint.
Oh, Utah Jazz?
Utah. They are number four, or bottom four, at 49.7.
Wow. All right, so we have one more?
You got one more. Same type of idea. You got the best shot blocker in the NBA, stats-wise.
Oh, Indy?
Yeah. Indy's bottom two at 50.3.
They're really...
No wonder Miles Turner gets his blocks.
Yeah.
Hot damn. All that opportunity.
So can you name the top five now?
Other than Golden State?
Golden State's number six.
Damn.
Just missed the cut.
Thought I had an easy one.
Yeah. Teams that protect the paint really well?
Yes. One of them is always in the top five because that's
Milwaukee
all they
Bucks.
Do. Yes. Milwaukee's number three. They allow 41.9.
Lakers.
Lakers are... I think they're middle of the pack, actually. Yeah,
Laker
they're number 16.
Girls. Damn. I just wanted to say Lakers like that. 76ers.
76ers number 11. So you have two really, really active teams on the perimeter.
Active teams on the perimeter?
Yeah, guys that just fly around in rotation.
The Miami? Raptors?
Yep, the Raptors are number two. Miami is number one. So wow, Miami is number one at 40.8. Toronto's number two at 41.8.
I would expect the Raptors without the without a center to be giving up a lot of points, but I guess they have to overcompensate for that.
Indeed. And then you have one more Eastern Conference playoff team and one team that's in the basement in the East.
A basement team in the East? That's not Toronto?
They played Toronto yesterday.
Oh.
You don't like my Toronto, Joe?
The Washington Wizards. Wow.
Yes, the Washington Wizards at 44.7. And then you have a somewhat surprising, really surprising, playoff team in the Eastern Conference that's maintained their play throughout the year. Ice!
Tibbs, wow, the Knicks.
Yep, the Knicks are at 44.4. Nice. Protect the paint at all costs. Oh, man.
I hope the Knicks make it out of the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
I want to see them solidified in the playoffs and not have to face Brooklyn or Philly. Actually, New York and Brooklyn would be a dope playoff matchup. They played each other really tight all year, right?
And Brooklyn wins every game, so it'd be a very tight four-game series.
But it's always by two. Well, that's also without Kevin Durant. But still.
I think they might actually get in the top six, though, if you look at it. Like, their only competition really is Boston, because you think Charlotte's going to probably bow out in the next couple weeks with all their injuries.
We thought that, but they've been still really good.
I think Hayward,
LaMelo.
But Hayward.
Yeah, Hayward is a big injury.
Yeah.
Damn. All right, well, good stuff, Josh. I'm going to call it here, guys. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Leave us those comments. Leave us those five-star reviews. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, all the major podcast platforms, Instagram and Twitter at Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.